Welcome to Love, Honor, and Asperger's, a podcast for partners in autistic or narcissistic relationships. Join author April Anderson and her guests as they delve into their personal experiences and offer their insight. With wisdom and wit, this podcast will provide listeners with invaluable guidance, unwavering support, and compelling real-life stories. Ready? Let's dive in.
Hello, my Cassandra brothers and sisters. Welcome to this episode of Love, Honor, and Asperger's podcast. Today, my guest is Dr. Kenneth Roberson, who is a clinical psychologist and a psychoanalyst who lives in San Francisco. He is the author of a book I'm sure everybody should read called Adult Asperger Syndrome, The Essential Guide. So he asks these questions that we all probably ask ourselves and answers in this book. Do you have Asperger syndrome or know somebody who does? Are you looking for a reference guide about Asperger's in adults? Do you have questions you'd like to ask an expert in adult Asperger's? If your answer is yes to any of these questions, this book is for you. Clinical psychologist and Asperger authority Dr. Kenneth Roberson examines the often neglected area of Asperger's in adults, covering topics such as what causes Asperger syndrome? Is it different in adults than it is in children? How can you find out if you have Asperger's? What are the advantages and disadvantages of a diagnosis? What therapy is best for adults who have Asperger's? Can adults with Asperger's change? Are there benefits to having Asperger's? Can adults with Asperger's have intimate relationships? I know this is one a biggie. Can they be successful parents? These and many other questions are covered in this important addition to the field of Asperger's as it occurs in adults. So welcome, Dr. Roberson, to the show. So happy to have you on.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I'm going to ask this right away, is how did you become interested in adults with Asperger's and the reasons that, you know, inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've been practicing for close to 40 years now. And for a long time, I was a child psychologist. I saw children, this is way back when, who were different from, you know, other kids that I've been seeing and didn't really understand much about those differences. And, you know, there wasn't really that much known about autism, or at least there just wasn't much literature about it. And so I didn't really understand what to do with these kids, how to help them. So I decided to learn as much as I could about autism.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And then, as it turns out, for several reasons, I gradually shifted to seeing adults in my practice. And in that transition, of course, I realized, oh, the children that I've been seeing are growing up to be adults. And they have...
Exactly.
They have autism, Asperger's autism.
Right.
And so, again, I decided to educate myself as much as I could about autism in adults and found out there wasn't really that much known about that.
Yeah, that's
and
for sure.
So I read more and learned more and decided to write a book that would help other people understand what I was learning about Asperger's in adults. So that's the background.
Right. And so you wrote the book. I know one thing you said was because the other information, which believe me, I went through when I first found out about my husband, was all technical, right? Very, very technical.
Very much so. And really hard to understand. The DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, maybe you're familiar with that, definition of Asperger's at that time was almost incomprehensible.
Yeah, it's true. You certainly couldn't apply it to everyday life.
Yeah. So I wanted to see if I could make it more understandable for people in general. And that's what I set out to do in the book.
Well, you know, and you talk about how it's getting so prevalent, correct? Or much more prevalent? Or we just are aware of it more?
I think we're more aware of it than we have been before. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that the overall incidence of autism has increased that much. I think we're just, as you say, we're more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have ways of studying it, detecting it, so on.
Right. So what we were going to talk about, we decided there's an awful lot in here, but there are certain traits that we were going to discuss. I'm trying to think. The communication. Oh my God. That's the one. You want to explain anything about that to the people that really don't know? I mean, you have to know, people listening here maybe have read a lot and maybe it might be their first time to even hear this.
Well, let me back up. There are two main categories of challenges, difficulties, however you want to call it, with autism. The first is communication, as you were mentioning right now. The other are restricted, repetitive behaviors.
Mm.
In terms of communication, generally speaking, people on the autism spectrum, and by the way, I think we should at this point address the difference between Asperger's and autism.
Right.
In 1994, Asperger's was introduced into the DSM.
Mm-hmm.
Three, I think, at that time. I won't go through the whole deliberations, but in 2014, it was decided that Asperger's would be incorporated into this new category called autism spectrum disorder.
Right.
Essentially, Asperger's is high functioning autism.
Right.
Just simplify the whole thing. That's the best way of understanding it. So I'll be using the term autism. I think for our purposes, we can assume I'm referring to high-functioning autism, which is synonymous with the old term Asperger's. Is that clear enough?
Yeah. I mean, okay. They really don't say Asperger's. What I was also, have you, a lot of the people that I'm on my forums and so forth call it level one. Do you use that at all?
Exactly. Yes. Level one autism. Yeah.
Okay. They call it.
There are three levels, 1, 2, 3. Uh-huh. Mild autism is level one. Mild autism, again, is essentially interchangeable with Asperger's.
You know, the high functioning, I mean, my husband was an attorney. He was successful.
The oh, people, yeah, sure.
You know, mm-hmm. And how about, you know, the famous people like probably Elon Musk or some of them.
I believe
or Bill Gates, right?
Bill Gates. Mm-hmm.
My
yeah.
gosh, I even read Lindbergh. I was reading a book, it's a wonderful book called The Aviator or something. I read that a long time ago and I started reading it. And just a few paragraphs, they said he was uncomfortable looking at people in a line and all. And I went, wait a minute, that sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
You know, famous people with autism, and Charles Lindbergh was one of them.
Yeah. A lot of famous people.
They can function, but then you have
a lot of accomplished people.
Right. It's an interesting thing, but they're not very great on relationships, as far as I can say.
That's one of the big problems.
That is a big problem, right?
So back to your question about communication.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just list some of the, again, challenges, if you want to call them, people on the spectrum, and that is interpreting gestures, making eye contact, interpreting facial expressions, understanding tone of voice and how what that communicates, the tendency to take expressions, body language of others kind of literally, recognizing emotions in others and recognize one's own emotions, expressing emotions in a way that is consistent with what they're actually feeling. Overwhelmed in social situations, taking turns in conversations, learning, you know, knowing how to judge.
They don't know when. That is how the very first clue I had, it was 38 years before I knew there was something off and nobody believed me, which is really stressful. But there was a woman in charge of Autism Delaware that used to actually skate. We have a nice skating thing here with my husband. And she said, I knew he was autistic because he never knew, he always self-referenced and he never knew when to, you know, when it was his turn to talk or their turn, you know, that was it. The back and forth conversation, the very first clue on that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's so easy for the rest of us. And also the facial things too, you know, they don't match what they're saying a lot.
Exactly. It's true. Yeah.
And that doesn't work out too well. Right.
So, and generally interpreting other people's body language is difficult. Oh. The nonverbal communication is often difficult. And some of the people that I see or have seen in the past have developed that skill, but they've done it through studying, learning, which is fine,
Yeah.
But it's just that doesn't come naturally to them. So they have to work at it to develop that ability to really read people.
Right. I used to have to have I used to say to my husband, just do what I say.
We're at
a party or with other people. He would never know when they're like, even back when he's in law school, you know, we'd have neighbors come over for cards and they'd be going, he wouldn't know. Hey, let's do that. And I would, it took them back then, I didn't know. But as things went on, I said, if I say we have to go, just go. That just means go. Nobody wants us here anymore. You know, right. He said, well, it's going to ruin the party. I said, no. You know, he used to think he's going to ruin the party.
The party if you stay.
Yes. And he just couldn't do the separation thing. You know, we just keep saying another word or another thing. You know, yeah.
He didn't get it.
But they can, you know, you can tell us how they can maybe learn some of that a little bit. So we're still in the communication. Yes. Do you have any more to add about that? Then we're going to go on to this coherence.
I think that's all I have to
say. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
See, the coherence thing, you want to explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, it's really getting at sort of the similar thing that we've been talking about, and that is having an accurate understanding of what's going on with other people in a coherent way, in a sensible, systematic way, as well as having some internal coherence, meaning one's own thoughts and feelings are coherent with how they're expressed. So a person, you know, a good example would be a person who is sad and lonely is having a conversation laughing and joking and, you know, completely different from what they're actually feeling.
Now, you talk about narcissism in this same paragraph about coherence.
Mm-hmm.
And my guy, we found out, had covert narcissism, didn't help, from abuse in childhood, which I had no idea about until later in life. That he was beaten by his mother and different things. So, and that bothers a lot of my little Cassandra gals. They don't know, is it only Asperger's? Is it narcissism? Is it both? Is it one and the same? What would you say about that? Do you think it's common in Asperger's or not?
My own experience has been is it's somewhat common in men on the spectrum. I don't think they're synonymous.
Okay.
I think the reason why they appear that way is that some people on the spectrum is where we've been discussing, don't really get how other people experience them. So like your husband, they can go to a party and just go off and talk all about whatever they want to talk about and not recognize that people are not interested after a while.
Exactly.
So there you get the impression that, you know, the person's narcissistic when it's
narcissistic.
It's not really what's going on.
Right. So then another trait you talk about is called intellectualization.
Yeah, here you have, and I'm indulging, I think, in a stereotype to a certain degree, but here you have a software engineer in Silicon Valley who go off about complicated coding issues and math problems and puzzles and so forth and so on, which is fine. I mean, it's no problem, but tend to dwell in that kind of logical world and are less comfortable with their own feelings and the feelings of others. So
no, they don't like feelings. They like facts more.
Right. Exactly. You know,
and then we have the literal rigid thinking.
Again, this occurs in a person who doesn't really get nuance very well.
Right.
Tends to focus on their own interests and has a kind of rigidity in how they think about the world. Black and white, good and bad. This is what you should do. This is what, you know, you shouldn't do. And there's not a lot of gray in between.
Yeah. My ex would always say, I'll just call him ex-former on these things. He always said, that's what I've always done. Would that fit into that? He says, that's what I've always done. So that's the way it always will be forevermore.
Right.
You know, anything as simple as how you get to this grocery store or how you, is not the routine thing so much. It's just, well, that's the way I've always done it. And I always wonder, when was the first time you did it?
Yeah.
You can't always have done it. You had to do it once first, right?
That's rigidity.
That's a rigid.
Yeah.
I've always done it that way. I don't care.
I've done it that way, and there's no other way to do it. And why should I bother to look for another way? It's the way it is.
Yep. Well, so that leads into the interest in the routine. How about the routines things?
Yeah. Getting up at 5:30 in the morning, every morning, walking around the neighborhood 3 times counterclockwise, or, you know, making coffee. Here's another example. In the most precise way you can imagine, with a series of steps that can't be altered, learning about cockpit instrumentation and B-52 bombers that were built between 1960 and 1972. You know what I'm talking about. These unusual interests and rigid routines.
Well, you think the routines is because one time, I mean, I am like the more of the hyper, fast-talking, aggressive person, really. And my ex was always seemed very calm, together, and all that. But one time I was trying to talk to him, and he has such a routine every morning. And I realized I could never get into that routine to say something as simple as we have to pick up somebody from soccer or something. You know, mm-hmm. He's in this routine, just this routine. And one time I said to him, are you listening or whatever? He said, I'm always thinking. He said, mm-hmm. I found out through all of this going on these years that he really, as much as I sound like my brain's going really fast, his brain's going faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to say these routines, like it's not uncommon to people in general, are comforting. So that's one of the reasons why people on the spectrum adopt these routines. They eliminate a lot of uncertainty.
Right.
Helpful. In many cases, they're predictable. One can mm-hmm. just follow a sequence and know that what the outcome will be.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be helpful, useful, comforting. It can also annoy the heck out of other people who are.
But you know, everybody has a routine. I mean, we have some.
Absolutely. Of course.
You know, but his would be exactly the same thing. And we had a little fireplace in our bedroom, and he always would hit all his stuff on this mantle. And I would try to finally throw, after he did his coffee and his read his paper and all these things he did, I would try to throw in something from, you know, that was going on. I could never break through hardly in the morning to tell him what I needed. And I realized he can't take his change, put them in his pocket and his keys and everything and still hear what I was saying. You know, eventually I guess he got some of it, you know, but I mean, he was just so rigid on that routine and I couldn't break through to it. And he'd be gone, you know, in the car off to work. And I'm like, this never got covered. We never, you know. Mm-hmm. But his routine, he had really had routines. I mean, routine was a big thing for him.
Yeah. And it sounds like you have experienced or did experience, and I think is common to others, that routine, while it may be helpful and comforting, as I said, for the person, when those routines aren't flexible in a relationship, mm-hmm. things they're difficult.
No, it's a pain, what it really is. So now, I like where you said at the end about all Asperger people, and it's so true. I mean, we're all different people. Everybody's different. And so you wrote that you found that people assume Asperger's is the same in everyone. And when they read or hear a description of Asperger's, particularly if it is a list of common features, they imagine everyone with Asperger's has the same thing. And it's not true. It's really not. I mean, they're all, you know, but they have certain. Right. So you listed three main problems. Social interaction was one,
mm-hmm.
and then communication difficulties, and just as we were discussing, the rigid routines and interests. So those three are the main things that when you would talk to somebody and all that, you look for.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So now you actually work with people with Asperger's, which is fabulous. So now the whole screening, and we can't discuss all that, but how would you say you go about screening as concise as you can? Because we can't go through all those tests and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you could just describe a little bit how you go through the screening and some of the questionnaires.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I can explain it pretty simply. This is the process that I use. People fill out two questionnaires. The AQ, Autism Quotient, is one, and the RAS, RITVO.
Okay.
Revised questionnaire first. And then I take a history, meaning I find out, you know, ask various questions about their current situation, challenges they're having, difficulties, better, what makes them think they might be on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take a history of their social, family, educational background. Then I have a whole series of questions that are based on what's called the ADOS-2, which is the diagnostic observation schedule that's been called kind of gold standard of autism assessment. These are involved questions about communication, routines, interests, sensory sensitivities, any stimming behavior they might have, interaction with friendships, early childhood communication problems. I also reach out to a person who knows them well and have a series of questions for them to get their feedback. And that's basically it. I put all that together and make my determination whether I think they meet the criteria.
So do you think there's an advantage to being diagnosed? I mean, I do. I mean, but
yeah, I think there are numerous ones.
It helps all of us that are not on the other end of it, really.
Right, exactly. That's one big one. For people who are getting assessed many times, most of the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's really affirming. Many of the people that I've assessed have felt for a long time that they're different and they don't really understand why. And they many times they tend to interpret their behavior as pathological is the word that comes out. It's not really the right word, but wrong, bad. Right. There's something wrong with them. And to realize that, okay, I have these characteristics and I understand now that I'm not a bad person.
Right.
This is who I am. I have these differences and that's okay.
When I first realized, well, my therapist finally figured it out. And I looked it up and I thought, you know, this is it. This is our problem. So I didn't know how my husband would take it, you know, when I wanted to say, guess what? I think this might be what our issue is. Mm-hmm. And I sat him down. We talked about, and I'll tell you, just in 2 seconds, he said, first of all, he watched a show, Boston Legal, which I didn't watch, but apparently there was a character on that show that did the stimming on his leg. He'd rub his thighs. So got right up when I told him, I think you have this. And he said, yeah, just like the guy on Boston Legal. And he started showing how he read. And I don't remember stimming so much. I can't think of anything he did. What I want to talk about is when you said different. So he said to me, I always knew I was different.
Yeah.
So he knew it in his heart. He was, by the time we figured this out, I think he's like in his 60s, I think. And he said, I always knew I was different, but I didn't think it would affect anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
In the meanwhile, I'm pulling my hair out and having to break down all that.
Yeah,
but
right.
He didn't think it would affect anybody. So that was just an amazing thing to us to find out. We were actually really happy when we found out what it was.
Good.
He was really happy. Yeah,
we ended up
still not making it, but
yeah.
But we're friends. We're still very close.
Are you really?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we're cool. We talk. Yeah,
and
we.
That's great. That's a great accomplishment.
I just decided I was getting so triggered by him because he also has that he moved out. My kids would say, a lot of married people don't live in the same place. But I finally thought, you know, I want to move ahead a little bit, and so we actually divorced. But who would do this? We went out to our local pub and celebrated our divorce. I mean, it's the dumbest thing, but we just knew it was one of those things, but we were going on our way after 50 years and kids and all. And
But that's touching. It's a touching story.
It was. It is. I mean, we're still close. I you know, if either one of us needed something, we'd be there, you know?
Yeah. How just wonderful.
Together and we're old. I just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah. I can appreciate that for sure.
Yeah.
The way you handled it is really the way it should be.
But we did. I finally said, you know what? We didn't really even have to. Well, I feel better that we actually really divorced. But sometimes I had a dream. I don't know if I should say this on this whole podcast, but I had a dream the other night. We talked on the phone. We always have issues. We have kids and we have money. And we both own the same property. Yeah. And I said, you know, I had a dream about you last night. And I did. I dreamt I had my arm in his. He had a white shirt on. You know, you know who you're dreaming about, but you don't really see him. And I said, you know, I really, in my dream, I said, you know, I really never wanted everything to go this way. You know, I'd much rather have just stayed married to we're old and we're already old, but older, you know, but it was just becoming too much stress for me.
Yeah.
You know, and probably for him. I don't know. So we're getting here, but I want to cover real fast here.
Yeah.
These dual diagnoses, because I thought it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. So you have mental health conditions most frequently related to Asperger's. So I don't know if you want me to just list them or you want to talk about, but the ADHD.
ADHD is probably the most frequent coexisting condition. They're both neurodevelopmental problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they overlap around the matter of executive functioning. You may have heard that term, you know, planning, organizing, carrying through actions.
Right.
Being attentive. In the case of people with spectrum, they can be too attentive. That's a problem of attention. So that's, as I was saying, kind of a frequent coexisting condition. Avoidant personality disorder is another one. I don't know if I don't remember if I put that in my book, but these are people who avoid people because they're afraid of criticism or disapproval or rejection, which is not the primary reason why adults on the spectrum avoid others. But nevertheless, the behavior is similar. They don't want to get involved. People who are avoidant don't want to get involved with others unless they're sure that they'll be liked and accepted. They hold back from close relationships and so on. And again,
that's understandable.
You can see some familiarity. Another is obsessive compulsive disorder. And that ties into the kind of rigid routines and the unusual interests that, you know, some people on the spectrum often have.
The social anxiety disorder.
Social anxiety disorder is another. That's true. It's just general anxiety around other people, but without the communication challenges and repetitive behaviors and rigid routines. Another is social pragmatic communication disorder. Is that in my book? I don't remember.
You got the schizoid personality disorder, antisocial, bipolar.
Yeah. I mean, these can coexist.
They can. Will you recognize it when you're talking to these people, do you think?
Generally speaking, I can. Yeah.
I mean, it's, I bet you do.
But as I was saying, ADHD is really kind of the most common overlapping condition.
Right. So now there's a whole bunch in this book. I'm going to talk a little bit at the end about it. So the questions you are most often asked about when you work with adults with Asperger's, and you said when we talked before that they ask you, can they change?
Yeah.
And I know people are really interested in that. What would you, I mean, I know you can't be specific.
I can answer that pretty simply. Yes, if you're motivated.
Right.
I've found in my career, at least, that motivation is really the key factor in changing. If you want to change, it's possible. If you don't want to, pretty hard.
Right.
And now when I say change, I need to add that that can mean within certain limits, limitations. Someone on the severe end of this autism spectrum who can't live independently, is almost pressed nonverbal, can't hold a job.
Yeah.
They're... range of change, if you will, if I put that way, is somewhat limited. But at the same time, they can change, they can improve, they can develop new skills, they can expand on the skills they have. Same with people on the more functioning end of the spectrum, who can have relationships, successful relationships, have a successful career, and so on.
It isn't really change, is it? It's sort of being able to function better or something.
Yeah, and this is an important topic to me because I think one of the misconceptions with autism is that because it is called a neurodevelopmental disorder, meaning you're sort of supposedly born with it and it affects your development as time goes on, the implication is that it's hardwired in you and you can't do anything about it. And I really don't think that's, generally speaking, true.
So I wanted to say here before we wrap it up that the women that I'm connected with so much are Cassandras. They're interested in the intimacy and romance. So you have that in the book. We don't have to go through all this because we're getting short on time. And then you have employment and parenting. That's really interesting. So I want to also say here that the really great thing about Dr. Roberson, I want to make sure it's Roberson, which we'll go into again.
Yeah, it's actually,
I'm sure you.
It's a long O, so it's Roberson.
Oh, it's Roberson. well, that's good.
It's Roberson, yeah.
Roberson. Well, that makes more sense. Okay. So we're going to call you, so it's Dr. Kenneth Roberson, Roberson. I want to spell it right because they mess up on the show notes and they don't.
No worries.
They've done that before. So, so what's really neat about this book, and actually how I contacted Dr. Roberson, is that at the end of the chapters, he allows, what do you say there? You call comments?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up because I want to say something about that. I'm happy to answer questions people have, but I want to be clear about one thing. Some questions I get are like this. Well, my husband does X. What's wrong with him? Well, I can't, I don't know. Or what can I do? Well, I can maybe offer a few suggestions, but the point I'm trying to make is I can't make specific recommendations to people without knowing the person.
But somebody could write, can you please explain more what you mean about this type of communication?
Kids
can't go, my husband, you know, last night we had a fight and what do you think? Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And the also I want to say is the bibliography and the references are fabulous. I mean, the book is worth it just to read all. I've read a lot of these books and I think I'll probably, you even have this one. I love this one, The Journal of Best Practices. Wasn't that the cutest book?
It is the cutest book.
Oh my God.
It's funny too. So, I mean,
it's funny. I mean, the guy wrote a comedy. It's called The Journal of Best Practices,
yeah.
A Memoir of Marriage, Asperger Syndrome, and One Man's Quest to Be a Better Husband. David Finch. I have that book. I have like a lot of these books.
He and his wife, they're now divorced.
Yeah, they did. They got divorced. Like my friend, but
they work together, and I think they do workshops together.
They do workshops. My friend, who's you know, I got to know some. I mean, there's negatives and positives. I guess there's positives to everything, and yeah. I met so many people. I met a gal in Florida. We were on forums way back before they even had them on Facebook. And she said, I think our husbands are clones of each other. Her husband's a NASA engineer, and now he's getting older and doing that. But she actually went to, what's her name? Kristen, I can't think of the wife's name, Finch's. She actually went to the workshops.
Oh, did she? Oh,
yeah, she
nice.
Did. Oh,
good.
Did.
Oh, good.
We actually went down to meet them one time, my husband, and we met and we had an Aspie hug, all of us.
Oh, really? Oh, how cute.
So that's we've nice. Met, you know, it's an interesting journey. Really.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It
that's
really is.
So, that's great right. to hear.
So I guess, you know, we're thank you so much for coming on. And we're going to go again. I'm making sure I say this right. Kenneth Roberson.
Roberson.
Roberson. I'm not going to say it right. It's Roberson.
No problem.
It's Roberson. And the book is Adult Asperger Syndrome, The Essential Guide. And that is a thing that we want to remember. It's a guide. And to answer so many questions everybody has. And I just want to say, I have a gal that she wrote the book Lonely in Love. And now she's writing Lonely in Truth. But anyway, she calls all of us Cassandras pioneers because we didn't know anything about anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to figure it all out ourselves. We had to read these highly technical books. And so now here we have a guide that it would be so helpful. You know, I could have used this book like, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was only about children. And
you were pioneers.
Yeah.
Goes back to what I was saying earlier about not knowing that much. Not having that much information when I was coming up in my career about adults on the spectrum. So,
you're right. Well, you're doing a great job with that. So,
well, thank you.
Anyway,
thank you very much, April. I really appreciate
it. Well, it was great having you on.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yes, it was. It was fun. I learned a lot from this, and I really appreciate your book.
And I appreciate all the work that you're doing and you're doing too with this podcast. I'm sure.
I don't know. I got myself into this, but it seems to be working out.
Good for you.
You never know what direction you're going.
Right. You don't, but.
You know, I hope people reach out to you because I know people need these answers.
Oh, thank you.
They ask me. And I'm like, don't ask me. I'm not the psychologist around here. You know, I mean, we are professional. We're just, you know, friends and stuff is one kind of thing, but professionals is different. You know.
Well, you're an expert in your own right.
You just can't talk. Yeah. For the pioneers. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, April. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please review, subscribe, and tell a friend. My website is www.aprilanderson.net. And remember to trust yourself, be strong, and don't let them get you.